Today I want to talk about being afraid of yourself. We learn to be afraid of ourselves. We learn to be afraid of what we think, what we do, and how we feel. When we experience emotional or physical pain for any of the normal human activities, we learn to be afraid of them and us for engaging in those human activities. Physical pain is easy to define. It's due to the impact of energy flows on the energy flows of the body. As an example, let's say a rock is thrown at us. That flying rock is an energy flow. It hits our body, imparting a large amount of that energy into the area of the body that it contacted. If the transfer of energy from the flying object to the tissue of the body are above the, what I'll say, are the acceptable threshold of that person's comfort, pain will be the result. Pain will be felt. The pain from putting one's hand on a hot stove is pretty clearly understood. The energy, in the form of the heat, is above the threshold of the normal temperature ranges for human tissue in the hands, and, consequently, pain is felt. Awareness plays a part in experiencing pain. I've occasionally noticed a bruise or a cut on my hands or my arms or my legs when I'm taking a shower. I didn't notice when it happened, but now I'm noticing the end result of it. So in other words, I wasn't aware of the energy exchange when I collided with whatever that object was, piece of furniture, countertop, desk, or something, that damaged the tissues of my body, but I could see the results. An insult can cause emotional pain. An insult is an energy pattern thrown at us, thrown at an object, maybe us, maybe we're doing it to an animal, maybe we're doing it to a thing, or somebody else is doing it. If a person is aware of the energy pattern that is flowing toward them and it hits them, by hit, I mean, if it's received and is accepted, it can hurt. It is the awareness of perception of the recipient that controls the pain felt or not felt. Somebody can clearly make an attempt to insult us, but if we don't take it seriously, that is, we don't let it hit us, we don't accept it, we don't receive it, it's not going to cause much, if any, pain. Over the course of our lives, we've learned how effective we are at producing successful energy exchanges, and we've also learned how ineffective we are, which would produce painful energy exchanges. Simply put, we produce pleasantness and we produce discomfort, and we all have experiences doing both of those. We have this human tendency too, and it's a problem. We take a specific isolated event, we make up a story about it, convert it into a rule, and then we generalize that rule into a globally applicable story that we then have now created a false prison for ourselves because we operate within that false rule that we just created. As an example, falling when we try to take a step doesn't mean we are clumsy, although that story can be started by us or others as a result of the event. The fact in that situation is this: we fell while trying to take a step, period. That's it. Everything else is made up. If we add things to it, it's our imagination that is at play here. If we judge it, we bring it into a consciousness form. We will be stuck with that consciousness form, and the effects of it can grow stronger and stronger in our consciousness and exert more influence over us. We judge energy into consciousness forms. Even though all of us know the biblical exhortation about judging, judge not, we still continue to judge. It seems as if judgment solidifies energy into consciousness forms that can hurt just like rocks or arrows or knives or needles and so on. Consciousness forms can be solidified by judgment into bricks that create walls that now are barriers that hem us in when none existed before and where none needed to exist. Consider this statement and see if it is true for you. Judgments of you by you and others are what you are afraid of. Let me repeat it. Judgments of you by you are what you are afraid of. And we can add in judgments by other people too. But as I'm going to explain, I think there's more to that. I think it is judgments of us by us that are the real problem. If we were only afraid of others, then those things which we procrastinate about that are not going to be seen by others, nobody is going to know we do them or don't do them. It's just us and whatever projects that happens to be, but we procrastinate them. If nobody could see them, we would do them easily, quickly, right? Effectively, end of story. But that's not really what happens. No matter what we do and don't do, we are the first to judge. And if we have learned to be critical and judgmental, and most of us have, we will be afraid of ourselves, and we're going to avoid risky activities. And by risky, I mean they have a high potential for painful judgments about ourselves. Being afraid of yourself will usually be limited to mental and emotional judgmental abuse. Of course, some people hurt themselves physically by various means, picking at themselves, pulling their hair out, cutting themselves with sharp objects, and other destructive behaviors. I suspect that before a person hurts themselves physically, they would have to have had caused themselves serious mental and emotional pain first, in order to stir up the negative energy necessary to propel them to carry out the physical hurting which follows. Another area in which being afraid of ourselves is influential is being afraid of our thoughts and feelings. If I think bad thoughts, I will be judged and punished. If I have certain emotions, I won't be able to control myself, and I may say or do something really, really bad and be judged and punished. Are you familiar with those two ideas? If we knew that we have the resources needed to create the effects that we want, that is, we can cause the effects that we want because resources are available to us, we could respond to every situation effectively. We could be safe and protected from harm in all energy exchange experiences. If we knew that, we would be so much happier and healthier. And then we wouldn't be so afraid of ourselves. First, being afraid of yourself is founded on being afraid of the way you judge yourself. Second, being afraid of yourself is founded on your fears of how you will react to another person's judgment of you. And third, based upon how you will react afterward to your reaction to somebody else's criticism. Here's how these scenarios play out. Number one, if you start a project, you have to put up with your internal dialogue. That dialogue is about how you are doing. Why did it take you so long to begin? The fact that you're not doing it fast enough, and maybe the way you're doing it is not as good as it should be. The quality is less than it ought to be. When somebody else other than you criticizes you, the defensiveness starts. You, being rational, start to justify and make excuses. If you start to lose control, you will either go into fight and get aggressive and argumentative, or you'll go into flight where you try to run away or distract or avoid that confrontation altogether. After the fact, you will criticize and badger yourself unmercifully for not responding perfectly. This is where, oh, I should have said this, or I could have said that, or what the hell was I thinking over when I overreacted that way? I'm very interested in understanding the idea of self-interest more deeply. I think self-interest impacts everything we think, feel, say, and do, as well as impacting everything we don't think, don't feel, don't say, and don't do. We don't know how to protect our self-interest while at the same time balancing other people's self-interests with ours. And that's frightening. I consider self-interest as a commitment to maintain the health of one's identity, or said another way, individuality. I'm going to repeat that. Self-interest is a commitment to maintain the health of one's own identity or individuality. Some people who refuse to prioritize their own self-interest can appear to be martyrs, saying, I sacrificed for you children. I did it for others, but not for myself, and so on. I think they believe they gain holiness or some similar quality by giving up their self-interest. And I suppose this could be true if the all too frequently appearing resentment and bitterness didn't show up. If it didn't show up as, you ungrateful, fill in the blank, after all I did for you, after all I gave up for you, after all I sacrificed for you. You may have heard those. You may have said those things. Others who are only devoted to their own self-interest without regard for anybody else's self-interest can appear as predators. You're familiar with those. The parts we are afraid of in ourselves are those two extremes, looking for expression, no ability or concern with our own self-interest, and complete focus only on our own self-interest. Those are the two ends of the spectrum, and they frighten us. Religions can promote martyrdom by promising rewards after death. And you may have heard, so please, give more money to your church and not to your family. And the ego would say, take more from others and prevent them from taking from you. Take, don't give. That's the law of the land. In those situations, as in most situations, I think the main ingredient we need and the one that is most often missing is awareness. One very obvious awareness we need is that of being aware of rhythm as a prominent aspect of life. Things come and things go. Sometimes that is so obvious that we forget it. We can say, she has a heartbeat, because we can hear the heartbeat. Right after hearing the heartbeat, though, we don't hear a heartbeat. But you know what? We don't shriek, she doesn't have a heartbeat. We know that between the heartbeats, there are no heartbeats. In between breaths, there are no breaths. In between blinks of the eye, there are no blinks of the eye. In between drinks of water, there are no drinks of water. In between thoughts, there are no thoughts. In between words, there are no words. If you want to feel peace quickly, quiet down and try to become aware of what that gap of between contains. Gap of between. Back to rhythm. Children playing on a seesaw is an example, maybe an excellent example, of the fun of rhythm. Life is more closely related to seesaws and mountain paths than to sidewalks, elevators, or escalators. To expect a straight line experience in the consistently high vibration of our thoughts, in having only harmonious feelings, of only speaking kind and loving words, and only taking highly constructive, highly productive, effective action, will lead to great conflict and resistance within us, because life will not happen that way. In reality, we will, like a seesaw, have higher and lower vibration thoughts. We will have more harmonious and less harmonious feelings. We will speak more kind, more loving words, and less kind, less loving words. We will take more constructive, productive, effective actions, and we will take less constructive, less productive, less effective actions. And if we can accept that basic reality, we can learn to be less afraid of ourselves. The goal is not to do things perfectly. The goal is to do things and learn from the experience, become more aware based upon that experience. Using the image of the seesaw again, let's choose the goal of playing in life. First, though, let me give you my opinion on what the goals are not. The goals are not to avoid the less desirable downs of the seesaw, or to pretend we can only live on the upcycle of the rhythm. If that were the case, the heart would only beat, the tide would always be high, and the sun would always shine on us. That's not reality. I think the goal is to elevate the height of the fulcrum on which you and I rest our seesaw. And by seesaw, I mean the range of vibrations of our thoughts, feelings, words, and actions. In other words, our consciousness. So let me give you this image. Instead of the fulcrum being only a few feet high off the ground, as you can imagine, a seesaw in a playground has maybe a metal pipe or a triangular piece only a few feet off the ground, and the seesaw itself, that horizontal board, it being only a few feet off the ground. Consider they now would be 10 feet off the ground, 20 feet off the ground, 50 feet off the ground, 100 feet off the ground, or even higher off the ground of materiality, because we can learn to accept and trust the divine support that is holding us up, that is always available to us, and we can rise higher and higher in consciousness. It is the divine support in the gaps of between that we can become aware of when we are not so busy and our minds are not so noisy, saying to ourselves and others, if they'll listen to us, my life is getting better. Oh, my life is getting worse. My life is getting better. My life is getting worse. In the gaps of between, we no longer have to be afraid of ourselves. That peace can expand from the gaps to the entire cycles of the seesaw of life. You and I know that if we wanted to have a balloon to go higher and higher, all we would have to do is make the balloon lighter. We can do the same things to ourselves. We can lighten up on the down cycles, and we could elevate our consciousness, become less threatened, become less fearful of ourselves, because we understand the reality of rhythm, and we are paying attention to it. Accept it as a blessing, supporting us in having the life that we want. And we would not have to be so afraid of ourselves. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is a pluralized prayer from the letter 8 of the Christ letters, Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. Doesn't that sound as if we're getting plenty of support and we don't need to be afraid of ourselves or others? We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care.